Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
There is a place where time stands still. Where nature is harsh and demanding. Where only the quick and the strong and the deadly can survive. This place is no place for civilized man.
I want my land.
Took it in the guts, Barry.
Far away from my...
All you've got to do now is pass the Australian culture test. Three simple questions, three correct answers,
did you get all this
and
together?
You go through that doorway to the greatest little country in the world.
The best is made of yards of highly chosen.
Good morning, everybody. This is Annie for Showreel. 3CR's look at the Australian moving image industry. And I have to say that thank you very much to a variety of people who put money into the Showreel pot for Radiothon. But I have still got $174 to go before I can say that I've reached the $1,100 mark. So if you are feeling generous, you could ring up 94198377 and throw in a bit of coin, or you go to 3cr.org.au to help reach my target of $174. That's lacking the 1,100. We're going to move on to the meat and potatoes of the program. I had a chat with filmmaker Nicola Macchio. She's the producer, editor, writer, director, all round effort there of this film called Somewhere After. It's a fascinating film, as you'll hear from the conversation that I had with Nicola about the response people had to COVID, during and after analysis of their experience of this huge communal event. It's set in Sydney. And it's real time, in fact, Somewhere After. It's getting its premiere at the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival on the 18th of July. It's on at 3:30 p.m. at Nova Cinema. You listen to the chat and you'll probably want to put it in your diary. Thanks for coming and talking to me, Nicola. Nicola, we're talking about Somewhere After. Now, tell me about how it started. It obviously began when COVID hit. And why are you making a film about it?
That's a great question, Annie. So it all started when I was sitting in my bedroom in the first few weeks of lockdown, and I was looking out the window and thinking. And then I looked at the time and suddenly realized that 45 minutes had passed, and I'd just been sitting there thinking. I thought, when would I normally do this? Never, you know, maybe stuck on a bus or a train somewhere. And I realized that there might be a film in this, and other people might also be having this experience of having more time to reflect on their lives. And that was the beginning of the film.
And so are you a filmmaker? Is that where you come from?
Yes, I'm a filmmaker. So I studied screen production at the Australian Film, Television, Radio School, and then started freelancing as a producer, an AD, and editor.
Okay, and so you're right about COVID. Time really did take on a different meaning, didn't it? Tell me about how you collected the group of people who you actually talked to through 2020.
It was a gradual process. So I thought about all of the people I knew, and I tried to pick people who I already had a connection with, because it's hard to build a relationship over Zoom if you don't know someone. And then I had a look at my list and I tried to pick out people of different ages, different occupations, people who lived in different parts of the city, like in the city or far outside the city, because that really impacted people's experiences. And then The final ingredient was, because there's a question which is an important part of the format of the film about what landscape would you give to lockdown or the isolation experience, I deliberately picked people who had some sort of creative interest. So we have a musician, we have a comedian, but we also have a banking software consultant who loves photography. So it's a real range of people.
Also, I suppose being in lockdown, there was a consistency about the interaction. People would have found it quite rewarding to call in at particular times. What was the format of getting people's involvement?
The format was, it was actually very simple. I just gave them a call and said, hi, you know, I'm thinking of making this project. Is it something you'd be happy to talk about? And everyone was extremely enthusiastic, much to my surprise. And everyone said on the phone, it was quite funny, you know, I'd love to chat to you, but also I don't have much to say because not much has been happening. And then we would talk on the call for hours. Like some of our interviews went for 2 hours as people talked about their experience.
Let's go to the filmic elements that you've created, because you deliberately came up with some visuals that would allow, you know, they act like almost like the muscles or the viscera between everybody's conversation. So there's a certain literalness in them, but actually as the film goes on, they become quite expressive, like the fish, for example. So they become expressive of emotion. So tell me about how you collected all those kind of images.
It was quite a process. So each person picked a location to reflect their experience, and they picked quite a range of places. So some that were quite easy for us to recreate. So someone chose a lonely shack in the middle of the wilderness, and we immediately thought Blue Mountains would be perfect, so that we went and shot that there ourselves. But then someone else picked Yellowstone National Park, and being an indie production, we couldn't just hop on a plane and fly over there. So it was a process of working with the DP to figure out the visual style for the film as a whole, and then going through online sources of footage and figuring out what would fit the tone and the story of each person. And you're right, it does get increasingly expressive as the film goes on, because once we've set up the landscapes, there's a bit more freedom to explore the kinds of feelings that those places can elicit once the audience gets to know them. So the fish is a great one. We have someone who talks about their landscape being the ocean at night, and they talk about how they feel a sense of this energy they can't release, and we have all these fish swimming around in the darkness underwater, and it just worked so well.
I know, it was amazing, actually. The other thing that was, of course, interesting, because people have to realise there's the before and after, somewhere after, which is what the title is about, because it begins with talking to these people when they're in lockdown, and then it goes into speaking to them, giving them the opportunity to reflect on what they said. Which is a really interesting process, isn't it, about memory and self-identification?
It's a really interesting process, and I'm so glad we did it, because initially we hadn't even envisaged doing that at all. And the reason we decided to go back was because as we were making the film about isolation in 2020, I was updating all the participants on how the film was going, and we went to film those places I was just talking about that they described, and I, you know, rang someone and said, oh, we're filming your tropical island today. And they're like, what are you talking about? What tropical island? They just could not remember at all what they had said. And I thought, there's something in this. So we decided to go back and find out what happened. And it just goes to show how we rewrite how we feel about things over time, because everyone was so shocked by what they'd said, or delighted, or surprised, or very moved. And it was such a roller coaster of emotions going through those interviews. It was fantastic.
And I'll tell you something else that's really interesting about it from a viewer's point of view, is that the eyes never lie. Like the people are speaking, but their eyes are telling you something completely different.
Absolutely. That was our experience, and one of the reasons why I chose to make the interview format through a teleprompter. So what happens is when we're playing back excerpts from the interviews in 2020, the participants are looking directly into the camera at the audience, but really they're, looking at a recording of themselves. And just that what comes through in their eyes as they're listening to themselves back. Sometimes I think we reveal more than we think we're going to reveal just through our eyes, as you say.
Yeah, well, of course, that's the thing. And that's what's so interesting about this type of filmmaking, isn't it? What did you learn? I mean, you had to be quite creative about making this film into something as interesting as it is.
Yes, definitely a lot of creativity was needed, and I was very lucky to have a really strong creative team as well. And we were constantly overcoming technical challenges together, like even building that teleprompter setup. We had to, attach a Bluetooth speaker to the bottom of a tripod and have, my laptop set up so we could play things through it. It was just all very complicated. But I think the thing I really learned from making the film was just empathy because I immersed myself in these people's stories for 6 years or 5 years, and I don't think it's often, you get to do that as an experience. And so I really learned so much about how everyone's experience of the same event can be just so different, and also how the process of change and wanting to change is very different for every person.
Well, it's kind of interesting because I was in Melbourne, and you do actually pinpoint differences between different places' experiences. But there is something very compelling about it being specifically in Sydney.
Yes, well, we had to nod to Melbourne because, as it says in the film, I think it was the to most total days in lockdown in the world was Melbourne. But I think it really goes to that idea of how everyone in the same place, supposedly going through the same or similar experiences, can just be so completely different.
The other thing is that there's a certain amount of revelation of self-delusion in the way people, I mean, not just them, but everyone considers themselves and their public persona speaking to you, the filmmaker.
Yes, I think there's a real element of people go into the follow-up interview 3 years after lockdown, I think, knowing or thinking they know what their past self would have said. And just it was very interesting to see how people were so surprised. Like one participant, Sid, who's a musician, I think pretty much every single thing he said in 2020, when played back to him in 2023, he contradicted. He said, "I'm completely wrong, completely different, disagree with that, disagree with this." And he's the one who really reflected that meaning from these experiences has to emerge over time, and what we do after, we can't know at the time how these things are going to affect us and change us.
One of the things that's most revealing, because it's a film and that's what makes it so interesting, part of it that's so great is seeing what people look like over time as they unraveled living alone compared to the way they looked when you talk to them 3 years later. The only person that actually looked more relaxed later was the clinical psychologist in her persona, which is really interesting.
Yes, I think we were so lucky to have a clinical psychologist come on board and speak to us, because she is a keeper of, hundreds or thousands of lockdown stories. And I think at the time in lockdown, as she talks about in the film, it was such a difficult time for her because, she almost had to, or she and a lot of other psychologists she knew had to close their books because there were just so many people who needed more support during that time. So it was good to see her a bit more relaxed in 2023. But she, talks about how her life became even busier after lockdown. It was sort of the momentum of that need for support kept building. during that time and after.
Melbourne Documentary Film Festival returns to Cinema Nova from July 7 with Documentaries Reimagined. Warm up the cold winter days with an eclectic program of local and international documentaries from independent and emerging talents. Proudly ranked among Film Freeway's top 100 festivals worldwide for 11 consecutive years, Melbourne Documentary Film Festival delivers stories that stay with you long after the credits roll. Screening from July 7 for a limited time at Cinema Nova, 380 Lygon Street, Carlton. 3CR sponsor.
And we're talking to one of the filmmakers who is being screened at the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival on the program today. It's Nicola McIndoe and her film Somewhere After. And as she says, it's an investigation of how COVID affected a range of people before and after the event. This is the last part of that conversation I had with Nicola. The film is going to be shown on the 18th of July, Saturday, somewhere after 3:30 p.m. at Nova. The other thing I suppose I should ask you is, how did you edit it?
Oh, editing is incredibly challenging. It was a process we had to figure out as we went. I actually drew on the editing practice of Ken Burns, the documentary filmmaker, and his advice is to actually edit the film without picture at first, because if you have a lot of material, you don't want to start cutting picture and spend a lot of time on that if the film is just completely too long. And ours, what started at 7 hours, the first cut was 7 hours long, which is of course way longer than the 80 minutes is now. So we edited it like a podcast first and tried to get the story right and gradually brought it down, and then started to introduce and experiment with the landscape imagery, and then started testing it. But we had a team of 4 editors. So I was involved in the assembly as well. We had Ben Anderson, who edited a fantastic film called Bird Eater, helping us, and Sam Hutchinson and Shemaine Koo, and we were all working on different parts of the film at different times to bring it all together.
And so did you, just as a matter of interest, did you have lots of conversation? Like how did it work? Tell me. That's really fascinating to me.
So we started off by Ben Anderson and I by creating index cards of each scene in the film. We had a massive wall of them, and just rearranging them to try and make sure every person's arc comes through. And then we would be working on our own sections of the film, the four of us, and then put the whole film together and meet, watch it, and have a big conversation, what's working, what's not working. And we were lucky to have other members of the team, including our DPs who shot it, and our sound team and our composer, all through that edit process, coming in and having conversations with us to make sure that we were, you know, improving the things we wanted to improve over time.
Right, so you had some themes that you became attached to.
Definitely we had themes we became attached to. I think initially we didn't realise it was about how people can use difficult times to change. That's really my focus in the film and what I hope people take away from it. But there were so many other themes that came out of the interviews, like empathy was a topic every participant wanted to talk about a lot, how lockdown is a time of empathy, thinking about the difficulties and challenges everyone's going through in this moment, like a communal experience, as you were saying before. And the idea of listening was a really important theme, you know, because we're listening to the stories of the people in the film, but then everyone's also has more time to listen to each other. So yeah, it was a slow process of figuring out how we could bring out those themes over the course of the film.
Very interesting. And what kind of software did you use to do the edit?
We used Premiere Pro, And then once we had several of us working on the project at once, we were set up a online server through this software called LucidLink. So I could be editing on a section of the film, and then someone else could be editing their section of the film in another house at different times of day, because we all had day jobs and other things we needed to do around making the film. So we had to sort of pass the baton remotely between each person to get the film done.
Oh, fantastic. Great work. And so it took a long time, but you got it in the end. And also, of course, Zoom is not, especially at that time, wasn't, high quality. And I've actually spoken to different people who have made, like Americans and stuff. They actually sent their interviewees microphones and, like they actually did things like that to improve because they were to improve the quality. But did you go out of your way for that, or is it all just as it was?
It was a bit of a mix of the two. So at that time when I started doing the interviews, I had barely used Zoom ever. I'd
Yeah,
never
I
really.
know. That's right.
So I had to learn how to use Zoom first. And then once I learned how to use Zoom, my number one concern for the film was sound,
That's
because
right.
in you can get away with picture being a bit iffy sometimes if it's, the real thing. But sound, if audiences can't hear, it's a disaster. So what we did was I spoke to a friend of mine, Bethany Stewart, who has experience working in radio and podcasting. And she and I came up with a system where the participants would record audio into a voice memo app on their phone, separate to the Zoom audio, and then send me the sound after the interview,
Oh, interesting.
because we couldn't, we wanted to send microphones, but then of course the problem was, as you might remember, there were problems with the post, like lots of deliveries were getting missed. So I was quite worried about sending an expensive microphone to someone. And then the other factor was we weren't sure at that point how exactly COVID was transmitted from one person to another.
That's
And
right.
so, because I was worried, because I knew some people who were in the film had health concerns or had family members with health concerns, I was quite worried about sending them a microphone. And I couldn't even, if I wanted to, with some people, take a microphone to them because they were outside my where I could travel, because of the rules. So yeah, phones and laptops were our way through it.
Well, that's and I suppose the last question is, how do the people feel in the representation of themselves in the film? You must have shown it to them.
We did. So once we had a solid draft of the film together, we sat each person down and gave them an opportunity to watch the film. And they were all, I mean, we interviewed really wonderfully generous people. They were really happy with it. And I think they really enjoyed hearing everyone else's stories. That was really what they took away, because none of the people in the film still have met yet. So they were really curious about other people's experiences. And most of them said, because everyone was quite vulnerable in their interviews, most of the people said, I was a bit worried about what I'd said, but then when I heard what so and so said, or when I heard about what so and so said, I'm so glad that we could come together as a group of people and share our stories.
The film is going to be shown at the Melbourne Documentary Film Festival. Is this its first outing, or has it been in other places as well? And what have been the reactions?
This will be its first outing. It'll be the world premiere. So I'm just cannot tell you how excited I am to see it in a cinema with an audience. But we have had test screenings over the course of making the film. And test screenings are so important for a project like this, where you're dealing with such complex material and you want to make sure that the audience is, taking away what you're hoping they'll take away from the film. And the reactions were just Exceeded all expectations. I think it really, every reaction was not just, oh, this is what I like, this is what I know, this is what I learned, but also these are the experiences it brought up for me. It was a real conversation of reflection for them on their COVID or lockdown experiences, their experience of isolation and how they changed and how they hoped they might change and the things that they still want to do.
Yeah, it's very interesting, isn't it? Because, of course, it was a communal experience. Thanks very much for talking to me today, Nicola.
Thank you for having me, Annie.
Yeah, and that was Nicola Macindoe, and her film is Somewhere After. It's going to be on at Nova Saturday, the 18th, July, 3:30 p.m. Very interesting film. Coming up next is, excuse me, coming up next is Published or Not, and we'll go out with Everyone's Watching.
Listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au. You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.